So in June of 1997, when Robert Aiken Roshi was visiting us, I gave a talk on case number 52 from the Blue Cliff Record, titled Jiao Zhou's Stone Bridge. So today I thought I'd begin this talk where I ended that one, completing a circle. And we'll see, maybe this talk will end where that one began, a circle within a circle. So I ended that talk with a poem written by the 13th century Japanese monk Musō Soseki. This is from the book titled Sun at Midnight, translated by W.S. Merwin and Soku Shigematsu. So this is from the book titled Sun at Midnight, and the title comes from a short dialogue between Musō and a student. The student asks the teacher, "What is the gate of the law which you are always showing to others?" And Musō said, "Walnuts falling on the Zendo roof." Actually, he said, "In Silla, the sun shines at midnight." So Silla was an ancient Korean kingdom, and the name at this time had come to signify somewhere impossibly remote in time and place. And that's one of its meanings here. So with that footnote, let me read you the question and answer again. "Teacher, what is the gate of the law which you are always showing to others?" And Musō said, "In Silla, the sun shines at midnight." So let's hope all of you will touch that place in this retreat, the ancient place that has no beginning or end, where the sun shines at midnight, where birds fly across the sky without leaving a trace, and fish swim in an ocean that is fathomless. Silla is the place of no place, where nothing is left out and yet nothing remains. It is right here before your eyes and right here below your feet. In Silla, there is no need for anything more. When there's just breath counting, when there's just mu, when there's only mountain dew dripping from inverted copper bells, where there's only the lone sigh of the person rustling next to you, then you're nearing the gates of Silla. When there's just this, then you're near Silla, where the sun shines equally at noon and midnight. So now I'll read you the poem written by Musō, and it's titled The Bridge Where the Moon Crosses. It arches like a rainbow, dividing the stream, joining the shores. One line, a road bringing life, crosses the quiet waves. It has carried donkeys across, horses across, but there is more to come. In the middle of the night, the moon is crossing it, pushing a cart. So this is a beautiful image, isn't it? And Sun at Midnight is full of beauty, insight, imagination, and wit, and is well worth a place in your reading area. Musō was a Zen teacher, as I said earlier, in the 13th century of Japan. And during his life, he was the founding teacher of 14 temples, each with a stone garden. He is equally known for his teaching, his poetry, and his gardens. And at times, his love of garden inventions show up in his poems. His gardens combined a great sweep of landscape and a feeling of space with one of intimacy and simplicity. So let me read you that poem again, where the moon crosses. So it arches like a rainbow, dividing the stream, joining the shores. One line, a road bringing life, crosses the quiet waves. It has carried donkeys across, horses across. But there is more to come. In the middle of the night, the moon is crossing it, pushing a cart. So the arching rainbow-shaped bridge is an evocative sight, and in differing sizes are present in Zen monastery gardens and walkways in Japan. I imagine they too must have been familiar sights in China during and before Musō's era. There is an especially beautiful rainbow-shaped bridge, the Moon Bridge, in the Japanese tea garden in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. These bridges are in the shape of a half circle, connecting the shores of this place here with the Lotus Land, connecting the shores of night with day, connecting the shores of scarcity and abundance, and of life and death. On a clear day, however, you can see the underside of the bridge or rainbow reflected in the waterway, which it crosses, and what appears is a full and complete circle. What appears then in that complete circle is the real and the imagined, the visible and the concealed, the known and the unknown. The top part of the bridge is what we use and know and what is familiar and seen. But as Gary Snyder has written, there are more things in mind, in the imagination, than you can keep track of. The depths of mind, the unconscious, are our inner wilderness areas. The conscious agenda-planning ego occupies a very tiny territory, a little cubicle somewhere near the gate, keeping track of some of what goes in and out, and sometimes making expansionistic plots. And the rest takes care of itself. We see the top part of the Rainbow Bridge, the familiar place that we tread daily. But please know, the other half is always right here, below, in the thonic depths that too is of great importance to our Zen practice. This is why staying with your one and only practice is so vital. On the surface, things may be going well or not. You feel settled, peaceful, calm, open, or not. And these words are all conscious designations of what you think practice and your life are to be measured by. But if you commit to your practice, and don't deviate by following rabbit trails of delightful, deep, insightful thoughts, feelings, and sensations, something below and out of sight will wake. It is easy to know the top side of our lives in practice. This doesn't mean the top side is easy, but it is the side of I eat, drink, and shit. I work, play, and pay taxes. I eat breakfast, wash my bowls, and put them away. I count from 1 to 10 and return again and again. And all of this is utterly important. But if we pay attention to our circumstances and conditions, and don't get swept away by the continual cause and effect, the action and reaction horizontal aspect of our lives. If we can attend to what is right below, a little deeper, a little more subtle, we would walk the underside of the Rainbow Bridge. And we do this by seeing through our circumstances, by seeing through our conditions, not by avoiding them, not by trying to go around them, not by going under them. We see through our eating. We see through washing our bowls and putting them away to the noetic implications of what is arising and falling. We don't count from 1 to 10 and start over again and again, but we stop. We stop fully and completely at each number, and thereby stopping, we completely forget ourselves. Knowing and not knowing are partners in our Zen practice. But once we get to the Zendo door and make our bows, what we know isn't so important. Once we know the schedule, we can put our knowing aside and enter the wild landscape that is, as of yet, unmapped and fairly unexplored. Please keep your attention on your practice and watch for what you do not understand, for what you do not know, for that is the entryway and the gate to realization. Let go of the protection of what you know and move into the terrain of not knowing, the terrain of your fear and vulnerability, the terrain of the unseen and the wild. As the poet Izumi Shikibu wrote, "It is true the wind blows terribly here, but moonlight also leaks between the roof planks of this ruined house." Don't settle on what you already know and on what you're already capable of. Let go of that and settle down a little more still. So I know I've drifted from the actuality of Musso's poem, but I'd like to say one more thing before returning to it. When Eileen and I were in Kyoto a few years ago, a place where Musso built temples and gardens, we went to a Zen garden which was built about 150 years after his death, Ryoan-ji. This is a small, maybe 200 foot by 60 foot walled-in garden with sand and pebbles as its base and 15 individual rock outcroppings. It is said no matter where you stand in the garden, you cannot see all 15 rocks at once. Sometimes you can see 11 or 12. In another place, you can see 13, or maybe 14, but you can never see 15. There is something unknown and unknowable, and it is always lingering right here, like the bobcat that roams from dream to dream. In the light, you cannot see its trail, yet it has never been concealed. And in the night, it sits unmoving right before you, and it makes the dark darker yet. So Musso's first three lines read like this. "It arches like a rainbow dividing the stream, joining the shores." So the rounded bridge divides the stream of life and death, and it joins the shores of anything we think opposite. But classically, I imagine this means it joins this place here, samsara, to that place there, nirvana, or it joins delusion with the shores of enlightenment. The next three lines say one line, a road bringing life, crosses the quiet waves. We can look at these lines, I think, in many ways, but here are a couple. The first is the one line is our straight and true practice. Even when there are troubles and tribulations, even when the mountain road has 99 curves, still we go straight ahead. Straight ahead, not with blinders on or taut reins holding us too, but straight ahead even when fearful or worried. Straight ahead even when anxious or harried. Because for thousands and thousands of years, this practice has held. It has guided untold numbers of pilgrims to the foot of the bridge and then over it. This wisdom path is well worn, and though at times it feels like it has never been walked, that is simply our fear misperceiving the many cairns marking the way as things alien and threatening. Endure, continue on, always straight, though at times it seems you're off the path and in deep weeds. Continue, because that's the way so many have walked before you. Now this might be another way to imagine the lines. One line, a road bringing life, crosses the quiet waves. This is from the last case in the Gateless Gate, number 48. A monk asked the priest Kan Feng, Bhagavats in the 10 directions, one road straight to nirvana. The student asked, he said, Bhagavats in the 10 directions, one road straight to nirvana. I wonder, dear teacher, where that road is. Without a moment's hesitation, the teacher lifted up his staff, drew a line in the air, and said, here it is. Here it is. It is never apart from this very place. It is never apart from now. But we need look past. We need to look through our normalizing perceptions and notions. We need to look through our societies and families' thin stories. We need to look through our dearly held and protected fears to here it is. It sits right here on the borders of what we know. It sits right here on the borders of the unfeeling normality of the civilized. We miss it often because we are overly focused on the hurt, the traumatized inner child, rather than on the forgotten animal who wanders through the landscape at the edge of our understanding, at the edge of our knowing, and at the edge of what actually can be known. Here it is, the one line bringing us to life as it crosses the quiet waves, even when it is windy, even when it's raining, even when it's dark and the stars are covered by black clouds. Here it is. And Musso next writes, it has carried donkeys across, horses across, but there is more to come. In the middle of the night, the moon is crossing it, pushing a cart. So now I'd like to read you case 52 from the Blue Cliff Record. A monk said to Jiao Zhou, I have heard about the stone bridge of Jiao Zhou for a long time. But I've come and found just a single log bridge. Jiaozhou said, you see only the simple log bridge, and you don't see the stone bridge. The monk asked, what is the stone bridge? And Jiaozhou said, donkeys cross, horses cross. So in about 100 of our common era, the Emperor of China had a rainbow-shaped bridge of stone built. And it was an architectural wonder and much visited. And that bridge still stands today. The monk in our story came to see the stone bridge, but of course, he really came to see the great Jiaozhou, who at the time of this dialogue was close to 100 years old. Jiaozhou started practicing and sitting Zen when he was 18 years old and stayed with his first teacher and only teacher for a little over 40 years. After his teacher Nanchuan died, Jiaozhou stayed in the monastery for the requisite 2 years of mourning. And at the age of 60, he took to the pilgrim's path for the next 2 decades. He eventually settled down at a small, dilapidated temple called Kanon Inn and lived and taught there for the next 40 years. Obviously a man in no hurry, confident and deeply aware of his own rhythms and karma. So this monk came to the 100-year-old Jiaozhou and said, I've heard about the stone bridge of Jiaozhou for a long time. I've heard about you for a long time, but I've come and found just a simple log bridge. What do you make of this statement? All of you who have hiked in the Cascades know about single log bridges. They're kind of teetery, often a bit frayed on the edges, and a tad slippery from the years and years of rain, cold, and snow. And often below these simple logs is a rock-strewn creek filled with deadfall hurtling down a deep chasm. So it is easy to hesitate before offering your life to that simple log. This is the monk's dilemma. He has probably walked for weeks and weeks to meet Jiaozhou. He must have had a burning intention, a question or an unresolved yearning, or he wouldn't have embarked on such an arduous and treacherous journey. But on his arrival, he is met by an almost ancient, seemingly worn, patch-robed monk. This monk came to see what he expected, but was met instead by something altogether different. He came to meet what he already knew, but he found what he didn't understand or know. And so he said, I've heard about the stone bridge of Jiaozhou for a long time, but I've come all this way and found just a single log bridge. Jiaozhou nonplussed said, you see only the simple log bridge, and you don't see the stone bridge. I can imagine the monk felt frustrated by the echo of his statement. But I imagine, too, that he also heard the truth of the echo, and the truth, the confidence, and the stability of the old man in front of him, who had nothing to defend, protect, or guard. Oh, you only see a single log bridge. Oh, and you don't see the stone bridge. There is no edge in Jiaozhou's response. There are no walls. The monk may have felt frustrated with the echo. He might have felt a bit dejected or even angry. But he might also have felt some hesitation, some confusion. He may have wondered what he wasn't seeing, because all those who had encouraged him to take the trip must have too met this all-wizened fellow. This is a wonderful place to be in the journey of our Zazen. We know, we've heard, and the sutras point to it. But all we've touched up until this point are hurting knees, a sore back, and sleepless nights. This is often when fear arises, maybe strong and palatable, maybe subtle and diaphanous, but it's lurking and leaking nonetheless. Please don't turn from it. Don't turn from it back to what you know or expect. Lean into it as did the monk. Lean into that which is right here below. Invite the animal, the bobcat, who is traversed in the edge of the landscape you are familiar with. Invite it to show its tail so you can follow it. This is, in a sense, what the monk did when he said, "Well, okay then, what is the stone bridge of Jiaozhou? All have talked about it, and I don't see it, but still, okay, what is the stone bridge of Jiaozhou? What is this that is just on the very edge of what I know and see? What is? Where is Silla? What is Mu? Who hears?"